The following is a lecture given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasavikari, recorded on October 23rd, 2009, at Self Discovery Center in Atlanta, Georgia, USA.
Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupa Sagrajata Sahagana Raghunatanvita Tam Sajiva Sajaita Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamsha So there are different ideas about advancement. The modern day idea is higher technology. That you can advance by higher technology. And actually that's true. But there's a different technology that they are not aware of, you see. That is a subtle technology. There, the modern day technology, it is gross technology. And they are becoming very advanced in the gross technology. That's a fact. It's like these cameras, you see. A few years ago, who could dream of cameras like this? So, in the gross plane, we are making very great advancement. But because we have neglected the more subtle advancement, the world is in trouble. Big trouble. Because of the pollution on the subtle plane, there are so many that becomes manifest on the gross plane in so many problems, you see. Epidemics, global warming, you know, terrorism, etc. But it's not difficult to solve those problems. You see, the politicians are trying to solve it on the gross plane. It will never happen that way. But in this subtle plane, all of these problems can easily be solved. Every problem can easily be solved. So on the gross plane, we have so many sciences, biology, chemistry, physics, etc., etc., etc. On the subtle plane, there is one science, that is the science of self-realization. So, if we can simply advance this science on this planet at this time, self-realization science, you see, and the whole world will be changed. We can turn this planet into a paradise. That's a fact. So this science has been very carefully handed down throughout the ages. Evam parampara praptam amam rajashayo vidu sakaleneha mahata yoga nashta parantapa. It is described in Bhagavad Gita. How this knowledge has been passed down from teacher to teacher to teacher to teacher, you see. It is called the descending process. In Sanskrit, avaroha panta. Panta means path. Avaroha means descending. The modern day gross science, it is called avaroha panta, ascending process. That you try to pick yourself up by your own intellectual prowess, you see. But in Texas, we have a saying that you can't pick yourself up by your own bootstraps. So as long as we are in the state of illusion, if we simply try to take our illusion, our illusory consciousness, and mess around with it or play around with it until we come up with what we think is knowledge, it's simply illusion leads to confusion. That's it. But in the descending process, we take what the ancient realized persons have already realized. They've already chalked out a pathway. Mahajano yena gata sapanta. These great self-realized persons in the past, they have already given a pathway. The yoga system, you see, has already been given. So this yoga science, if we take it as it's already been given by great, great rishis, yogis, mystics, swamis, gurus, you see. If we can take this system and simply walk the path, that's all. Get on the path and walk the path is all you have to do, really. It's not difficult. It's not that we have to blaze a trail through the wilderness. The trail is already blazed. You simply have to get on the path, that's all. I was fortunate to discover a great, great spiritual master who knew that path intimately well. Actually, I spoke in the past tense, because physically he's no longer present, but actually, who knows that? Because he's not actually gone. Only apparently gone. His divine grace, Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Pariva Jagacharya Astatarasashishimad Esi Bhakti Vedanta Tridandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada. So he is on that pathway. And by following him, you see, I become situated on that pathway. That yoga pathway. So it is actually not difficult. If one is desiring to become self-realized, it is not difficult. If you're really serious about it, not difficult. Simply have to find the teacher who is on the pathway and follow him, not difficult. Anything you want to do. If you want to learn how to play the guitar, you got to find a guitar teacher who knows what he's doing. You want to learn how to do tap dancing, you got to find a tap dancing guru. So, if you want to become self-realized, Krishna says, tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya Upadekshanti te jnanam ganina tatvadarshina. Just try to learn the truth by approaching the bona fide spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively, render service unto him. Such self-realized souls can reveal everything unto you because they have seen the truth. So one is fortunate to find a bona fide spiritual master, then actually he reveals everything. Everything becomes revealed. Nothing remains unknown. So what is realized by the sincere student on that yoga pathway? The first lesson is, I am not this body. You see, I'm not white, I'm not black, I'm not male, I'm not female. You see, I'm not American, I'm not Indian. None of these things. That is not me. It is simply a garment. Just like now I have this chadar, you see. Is it me? No. I can wear it, or I cannot wear it. I'm still the same person, with or without this chadar, isn't it? Did I change any by taking the chadar off? No. I'm still the same person. I put the chadar back on, I'm still the same person. I haven't changed any. So his body is chadar, that's all. Whether you have that body on or you don't have it on, you're still the same person. It doesn't change you. Your body, having it or not having it, having this one or another one, have a white one, a black one, a male one, a female one, whatever it may be, a young one, an old one, it doesn't matter, it doesn't change you. See, that's the first lesson. As long as we remain in the misidentification with the body, we cannot advance on the yoga pathway, self-realization pathway. But that doesn't mean you neglect the body. I mean, do I neglect my chatter? I take good care of my chatter. It's nice chatter. So you take good care of your body. Feed it, clothe it, bathe it, you know. Take it to the doctor, whatever it needs. We don't say the yogic path doesn't mean you neglect your body. You take good care of your body. Actually, you take better care. Because this human body, of all the different species of life that exist throughout the universe, the Vishnu Purana describes 8,400,000. Long before the biologists tried to count them, it was already counted by these great sages. Jalajanavalakshani stavadakalakshavingshati krimiya rudrasankhyaka pakshinam dashalakshanam trimshalakshani pashavahachaturlakshani manashah. What that means is there's 900,000 species in the water. There are 2 million trees and plants. There are 1,100,000 types of worms, reptiles, insects, you see. There are 1 million types of birds. There are 3 million types of beasts and 400,000 types of human beings. Now, we don't see that many different races or species here, but this talks about throughout the whole universe. So yes, there are beings on other planets, human beings on other planets, but they look a little different than we do. But they are human beings. It's not simply science fiction. There are human beings throughout the whole universe. So, these 400,000 different types of human forms out of the 8,400,000 are a very, very special opportunity because we go through an evolutionary cycle. No, it's not Darwin's evolution. This existed before Darwin's evolution. This is the original evolutionary theory taught by the great sages. You go through these different species. You see, plants, aquatics, insects, birds, beasts, human beings. When you evolve to the human form through the repetition of birth and death, lifetime after lifetime, you finally get born as a human being, then you have a very good opportunity to become self-realized and get out of the cycle. To regain that original dimension beyond time and space, beyond birth, death, old age, and disease, where there's an eternal, blissful existence. So that's the pure state of the enlightened state, you see. You re-enter that original divine state of consciousness beyond the sufferings of material existence. We originally were there, actually. Actually, we're all spiritually enlightened beings, just we forgot. We're dreaming right now. Of course, it's real. I'm not saying it's unreal. But this is not the ultimate reality. You see. We're taking this quasi-reality as the ultimate reality. I'm not saying it's unreal. There is a rug here. There is a house. We're all sitting here. I'm not saying it's false. We are here. That's a bit. But this is a quasi-reality. It's a temporary reality. When we wake up, we'll realize we're not this body, we're eternal spiritual beings in relationship with the supreme reality in this way. So the self-realization process is simply a process of waking up and realizing who you've been the whole time, but you forgot about it. In other words, it's not creating something new, it's peeling off all the pollution which prevented you from actually understanding who you really are. That's it. In other words, you just really have to be who you are. I mean, in the simplest terms, self-realization means be who you really are. That's really all it really means. Know who you are and be who you are. See, we've been conditioned from the first day we came out of our mother's belly to think that we're the body, isn't it? What do they say? Oh, it's a boy, it's a girl. They all get all excited, you see. So immediately you hear a little innocent child who's proud, who's almost in a pure state of consciousness, in a very innocent, pure state. He's being programmed by all of the family members to identify himself or herself as the body, you see. Which is a temporary lump. It goes through birth, death, old age, and disease. It has nothing to do with the actual self. And it's a very inferior product compared to what the actual self, the position of the actual self. It's like being a Rolls Royce owner and being convinced that some old piece of junk is the greatest car in the world. You should drive that instead of your Rolls Royce. You know, something with the muffler with rust holes in the muffler. You know, the tires are about ready to blow out any minute. The radiator's leaking water. The oil's dripping. I mean, a complete bomb. You know, when actually you have a Rolls Royce back in your garage, but they put a spell on you. So for your God, you have a Rolls Royce, and you're taking this old bomb to be the greatest car in the whole world. So we're just telling you, get back to your Rolls Royce. I mean, come on. You should be driving your Rolls. Why are you driving this thing? You know what I mean? So, these ancient sages throughout, it goes back, we're talking millions of years. I mean, the modern day historians would think we're not. Would think the Vedas they say it's mythology, actually. But that's a bunch of nonsense. The Vedas are not mythology. The Vedas were calculating calculating time by the dividing of an atom. I mean, this is thousands of years ago. There's a whole chapter in the Srimad Bhagavatam called Calculation of Time from the Atom. This is 5,000 years ago they were talking about this stuff. This is high-level science, actually. very high level science. In the Vedic age, their technology was far more advanced than what we have now. Through manipulating the subtle energies, they could do things on the gross platform which the scientists can't even conceive of today. It's so advanced. But they were not concerned with it. A yogi could make a whole city in the sky. One yogi got married, and for his honeymoon, he made a whole palace in the sky with gardens, parks, lakes. I mean, talk about a honeymoon. You know, we're so proud of our modern-day Dreamliner, the airbrush Dreamliner, you know. I mean, this was incredible. And so he flew all over the universe with his bride, you know. All over the universe. They went to the place where the demigods went for their vacations. They went everywhere in this celestial airplane, which was a whole palace full of, you know, gardens and lakes. And just the scientists can't even conceive of this stuff. This is through the power of yoga. Actual yogi, you see. He has the power to easily manipulate the gross energy because he knows the subtle laws behind the gross energy. See, modern day science is still, I mean, with quantum physics now, they're trying to get to the subtle platform, but they really haven't mastered it. They're far from mastering it. But the yogis have known for thousands of years, you know, they're just trying to start to get a little bit close to it, that's to even think about it. So the point is, we can take advantage of this wonderful, fantastic self-realization system, the yoga process, and completely transform our consciousness. There's many types of yoga systems given. Hatha yoga, jnana yoga, karma yoga. But in the Bhagavad Gita it is described, yoginam api sarvesham madgatena taratmano shadavamuchite yomam soma yuto tamomataha. Krishna is saying, of all the yogis, the one who abides in me with great faith, worshipping me within himself, is the most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all. So one can approach the topmost platform through any system. Some people like Hatha yoga, some like this type of yoga, there's so many yogas. But the yoga path is one. It means to yoke or link with the Supreme. The yoke, the Sanskrit word yoga, has manifested in English as the word yoke, according to the etymologists. Our English word yoke is a derivative of the Sanskrit word yoga. So when you link or yoke with the Supreme, you see, the Supreme Consciousness, your individual consciousness, and when you yoke or link with the Supreme Consciousness, that is called yoga. So there are many techniques, as they say, different strokes for different folks. There's many different techniques of how to dovetail your individual consciousness with that Supreme Consciousness. In this age, it is specifically mentioned through the mantra yoga system, chanting sacred mantras. One can, that's the easiest system in this short-lived age of Kali, when we live to be 100 max. And who lives to be 100? It's very rare. They get in the newspaper. Oh, even if you're in the 80s, you get a big title, you're an octogenarian. You really made it to the 80s. The 80s is big now. What to speak of making it to be a centurion, you see. But in this age, because our lifespans are very short, previously they lived 100,000 years even. In this age, it is recommended to chant mantra. Sacred sound vibrations are very powerful in this age. There's not that you have to chant according to a particular religion. Anyone can chant according to whichever religion they prefer. Someone can chant a Christian name for God, or a Hindu name, or a Muslim name. The point is, the Vedas are saying that all the names are powerful. The Vedas are not promoting any one particular religion. They are teaching the science of how to connect with the Supreme Reality. So you can take any name of God, any name of that Supreme Reality, and chant that name, you see. Dive deeply into that name. That is the easiest type of meditation. That is the most powerful type of meditation. Because you have something to hang on to. You hold on to that name, and that name will take you to the other side of reality. You see, right now we're in the realm of time and space, the material dimension. But that name, which act the names, the sacred names of God, they come from the other reality, the other side of the reality, the non-space, non-time reality, the spiritual world. These names have descended. Golokera Prema Dhana Hari Nama Sankirtana. These names have come from the other side of reality. So you take any name according to your choice, any name of the Supreme. And you make that name your, take shelter of that name, you see. And that name will take you to the other side of reality. You may say, well, this sounds like, how could this be true? I mean, well, only one way to find, to really prove it, not to take the name, take shelter of the name and see what happens. Until then you may say, well, I don't believe it. Well, prove it. Well, there's only one way to prove it, and that's to give you the name and let you take the journey yourself. I could say, well, I've taken the name, I've gotten there, but who? I could just be lying. Is it? How would you know I'm really telling the truth? Well, you look honest, or you look like, or some people think I look honest, some people think I look dishonest. So what can I say? The only way to really prove it to yourself, and this is, if this the name can actually carry you to the other side of reality, is you do it. If you're daring enough, and it's not that difficult, you just get up in the morning, and you take the name of the Supreme, you do it every day. Preferably before sunrise, because it has more power than. Chant the name of the Supreme, before the sun rises. You see. And audible chanting is more powerful. You, silent also has power, but the audible chanting vibrated. So it's actually vibrated in the tongue, it's heard in the ear. Then it becomes very, very solidly situated in the consciousness. So if one takes shelter of the name, then that name will, you will actually experience a transformation of your consciousness. You'll experience how you're leaving behind this bodily conception of your identity, how you're actually entering into another dimension. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatmana Sochati na Kankshati Samaksarveshu Bhuteshu Mod Bhaktim Labhate Param. Krishna describes this consciousness in the Bhagavad Gita in chapter 18. He says, one who is thus transcendentally situated comes to the platform known as Brahma Bhuta, the enlightened platform known as Brahma Bhuta. Krishna describes in that Brahma Bhuta stage, one doesn't lament about anything, nor does one hanker for anything. In other words, you're totally satisfied. You don't feel like you're missing anything. You feel like you have everything. You're completely satisfied. And the next stage is samaksarveshu bhuteshu. That's such a person, he or she is equally disposed towards every single living being. In other words, you have perfect love. You've achieved the platform of universal love. You have no enmity towards anyone, even your enemy. You feel no enmity, even for your very enemy, you see. You see everyone is part and parcel of that Supreme Reality. And you love them because of it. You see, samaksarveshu bhuteshu. And Krishna concludes, Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param. And in that state, that enlightened state, you will attain feelings of devotion from me. See? In other words, whether you say Krishna, Allah, Jehovah, same principle, that Supreme Person, whichever name you may call, you see, that Supreme Person is saying that once you get to this Brahma-Bhuta stage, once you've actually crossed through the boundary between the dimensions by taking shelter of the name, then you will develop love, feelings of love for the Supreme Person. I mean, why not? You're loving everybody else. You would not leave him out. The Supreme Person, you see. If you're loving everyone else, then why would you leave out the Supreme Person, the source of everyone? You see, that doesn't make sense. So, that is the wonderful system. So, it's like that back in the 60s there was one popular song, the Birds did one song. Roger McGinn, the head of the Birds rock band, he sang in one of his songs, he said, I opened my heart to the whole universe and I found that it was loving. So, in the Vedas, we understand the greater conception of the universe. See, according to modern science, it's this, you know, what we see at night, but actually, that's just a little tiny mustard seed in a bag of mustard seeds. The higher conception of the universal reality is it goes far, far beyond what we call this universe. There are millions and billions of universes within the cosmos, and that's just 1/4 portion of the totality existence, the total existence. So, if I were rewriting that song, I would say, "Open my heart to the total existence," and I found there was a Supreme Person there behind a loving person behind the whole thing. That's how I would rewrite that song. Because there's a total existence which contains a material dimension and a spiritual dimension. And at each dimension there are millions and millions of planets, you see. But behind that supreme reality there's a person who's not limited. He can be in one place and at the same time be everywhere all at the same time. It's like the sun is in one place, but at the same time it's everywhere by its shine. It's in one place and it's all pervading simultaneously. So the innermost secrets of the self-realization process is to connect with that supreme conscious or the supreme consciousness or that supreme conscious being. That's the innermost secret. How to connect with that being who is being everything at the same time being aloof from everything simultaneously. That's when our true being becomes fully manifested. And the yoga system will take us there, especially the bhakti yogas, by developing love for that supreme being. So maybe there's some questions.
Bhakti yoga is like yoga for doing something, yes, or serving and doing some work.
Bhakti yoga is yoga of doing something.
Actually, the answer is yes and no. For the beginner in the bhakti yoga path, he does. In other words, in our normal everyday life, at this present stage of our lives, we're doing so many things, isn't it? Going here, going there, doing this, doing that. We're all very busy. So in the bhakti yoga system, you can maintain your busyness, but you dovetail it with the Supreme Consciousness. So yes, it is, but then in the beginning, the activities themselves are a great source of transcendental pleasure for the bhakti yogi. But on the advanced stage, even with all those activities, just within his heart, he has a heart-to-heart relationship with that Supreme Person. And just that, even without any activity, he's purified now of any tendency to act in any, when he becomes completely purified, free of any tendency to think, act, or speak in any way contrary to the Supreme, then he can be active or inactive. His inaction becomes action, and his action becomes inaction. He can just be sitting somewhere and be in total bliss. If he has nothing to do, if he's just sitting on an airplane, you know, going to India or something to bathe in the holy river, even while he's sitting on the airplane, his state of consciousness is just as good as bathing in the holy river, even when he's on the airplane. But yes, it does mean that we engage our activities. We connect our activities with the Supreme. It does mean that, yes. That's a fact. But it doesn't mean that if you're not doing something, you can't be enlightened. Because such a person who has purified himself by engaging his tendency to act in the service of the Supreme, he can be sitting or acting. In either case, he's fully connected with the Supreme. Yes.
How long did it take you to get to that state?
How does one?
How long did it take you to get to that state of connection?
Yes, the. Well, the key is the real turning point for me. I mean, I started off as a college student wondering, why do I exist? What's the whole point of this thing anyway called existence? None of the professors could tell me. I spent about from the fall of 65 up to the spring of 71, we're talking, 4.5 years searching for the proper teacher, the proper system. It took me 4.5 years to get plugged into the system of finding Srila Prabhupada, my spiritual master. But the amazing thing is, once you actually take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master and you surrender to him, then you actually, it's instantaneous. From the moment of, the Prabhupada says, my spiritual master says, from the very moment of initiation, you achieve immortality. So, it's like you go to the grocery store and you get the mango, but it's still green. You got a mango, and it's yours, but you gotta wait, it really ripens. So, actually, it took me 4.5 years, because once I took shelter of my spiritual master, so this is my guru, I surrender to him, and that's it, his order is my life and soul. That very moment of taking him, in August of 1971, Prabhupada said that from the very moment of initiation, one enters into immortality. Of course, you have to keep your vows. You can slip out of that, you see. If you think, well, I don't know. I don't think I'm going to keep my vows. I mean, I think I'd rather do something else. Then, of course, you lose it. But if you actually take initiation from a bona fide spiritual master, and you stick to your vows, in the very moment he handed you the beads in the initiation ceremony, that's when you actually attained it. So I could say that I attained it the moment that I got the beads from my spiritual master, from his hand. Because if you take those beads from your guru with all series, this is now my eternal connection through my spiritual master with the Supreme Person, the Supreme Reality. You take that vow with the utmost seriousness, then you actually from that very moment of initiation you achieve perfection. But it's a little green in the beginning, of course. But you got it. You just got to stay in the process, and then that greenness will, and that green mango will become a fully ripened mango in due course. And that happens, you know, that happens very subtly and very gradually. And it never gets boring because that, it just gets sweet. It just gets sweeter and sweeter and sweeter ad infinitum for all of eternity. So the only really major turning point in that process of enlightenment is when you got initiated. That's the major turning point. Everything else is just a gradual, gradual sweetening, 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 sweetening. The Christians say, the Damascus experience, as they call it, say in Christianity, that's initiation. That's when you're reborn spiritually. When you take initiation from Guru Maharaj, spiritual master.
And then you just feel that state of love.
Then you just keep refining it, and it just keeps sweetening. You just perfect it. That's all. You've got it now. You've got the enlightened state of consciousness. Now you just perfect it and perfect it and perfect it, and perfect it. You keep perfecting it more and more and more and more, and it gets sweeter and sweeter and sweeter. But the actual enlightened state was when you've actually entered into the enlightened consciousness from the moment of initiation. This is my guru. I take his orders, my life and soul, and that's it. From that very moment, you accepted him as your eternal shelter. That moment, you become enlightened. So that it happened to me in August of 1970. That's the answer.
Can I ask you one other question? You said that it used to be that people would live for hundreds of thousands of years, and that now in this particular time in history, the age is 80 to 100.
Yeah.
Do you see that changing?
Yes, actually, we are going to go back to the Satya Yuga. That's good news. We are going to go back to the age when the days when people lived to be 100,000. That's coming again. Yeah, it's coming back. Like seasonal changes. But it's not going to happen anytime soon. I mean, it wouldn't hold your breath, you know. It's due to happen another 427,000 years from now. But the good news is this. The really good news is, 500 years ago, there was a spiritual revolution begun in India by the incarnation of Krishna known as Lord Chaitanya. And that is a 10,000-year period of, you know, like a age of Aquarius, some people call it. It's a 10,000-year period, when a golden era, which is described in a wonderful book written 500 years ago, just as it began. There's a book called the Chaitanya Charitamrita to describe this golden era. Right when the golden era was beginning, it was described, such janda durjanda pangu, jadda anagana, Premavanvaya Dubaila Jagatara Jana. There is a Prema tsunami. It's like the tsunamis now we have. A tsunami of Prema, pure love of God. And it will inundate the entire universe and drown everyone. So that Prema tsunami was inaugurated, it began in the year 1486. And it is in the process of, you know, right now it's very subtle. Right now it's very, very subtle. It's not very overtly manifested yet. But it's there. It's like, you know, the apple tree. The seed's been planted. It's sprouted. It's starting to peep out from the ground a little bit. That little seedling's coming up. You see? So it's happening. It's in the seedling stage right now. There's a golden era in a seedling stage right now. And the more people get on board, the faster it'll happen. So that's one reason I came in then. I encourage everybody to get on board with this spiritual revolution that's in a seedling state right now. Because the more people get on board and dedicate themselves to the spiritual revolution, the faster it will happen. It's synergy. You know, synergy. So the more we put our energy in, you put your energy in, I put my energy, he puts his energy, they put their, you know. The more we get people to put their energy into this spiritual revolution, the faster it's going to happen. I'm hoping before I die I'll see it come fully manifested. That's my secret desire. Not so secret desire. I want to see the whole thing happen before, you know, I want to see them chanting the names of God in the U.S. Senate, you know, before they have their session, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Big Hare Krishna Kirtan, you know, in the White House every morning, you know. I'd love it, you know. The U.N., you know, just imagine having a, so anyway, that's my dream. In all honestly, I doubt I'll be long enough. I'll live long enough to see it. But you know, I'm one of those impossible idealistic dreamers from the '60s, and I just don't change. That's just my nature. You know, impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, said, and I believe it. Even that old, what is that bumper sticker? You know, expect a miracle. What is that popular bumper sticker? Something like that. You know, a miracle can happen anytime. I mean, I figure tomorrow the whole world can, you know, it's possible that a miracle could happen and tomorrow morning everybody on the whole planet would become transformed into an enlightened transcendentalist. It could happen within 24 hours. I'm convinced it could happen. Therefore, I'm putting all my energy into trying to do whatever I can to help. I know I can't personally do it, but I know that I can help it happen. You see, I can be a part of it. I know that. So therefore, it's already predicted. It's going to happen. So hey, I'm going to put my energy in. You know, whatever energy I have, I'm throwing it in the pot. I hope everybody else will do the same. You know, let's pool this. Let's pool our energies for a spiritual revolution. And, you know, if we get 10 million people to do it, hey. You know, the people are so worried about global warming, but actually they don't realize all these gross problems are simply a manifestation of the subtle contamination that everybody's holding on to in their hearts. All we have to do is clean up our consciousness and then nature will reciprocate with us. We don't have to try to lord it over nature. All we have to do is try to live in harmony with nature and then nature will come back into harmony. Nature is in disharmony now because we're in disharmony. Just like in allopathic medicine, they treat each part of the body separate. But now the holistic medicine, you take it the whole thing as a unit. You see, so that same holistic consciousness should be applied to the whole universe. You see, the minor day scientists, they're trying to use allopathic techniques to solve this problem or the economic problem. You know, we got to do a massive thing of printing more money, you know, printing billions of dollars, pumping into the economy, artificial money, that will solve the problem. No. If you want to solve the problems, take a holistic approach instead of an allopathic type of approach, you see. That is, reconnect your consciousness with the Supreme Consciousness. Through love. Of course, there's the other yoga system there, but the system of love is recommended as the most powerful. Because when you love someone, then you're connected with them more powerfully than any other way you connect with them. So if we connect with that Supreme Person through love, then automatically everything will become adjusted. Any other questions? Yeah.
So does yoga change characteristics of a person? Like, I mean, if there is transition, if you practice bhakti yoga for years, like, from a restless, jealous, so bad person to a good person, and something like that?
What did he say? You hear what he said? I'm somewhat deaf. You haven't figured it out already. But
if say, does the yoga change a person? If a person is very jealous or greedy or anything like that?
Does the person change?
Jealous means envious.
The bad qualities of a person, does it change?
By bhakti yoga, does the bad person...
The bad qualities are simply a covering. Everyone is actually a saint. Every living being on this planet is actually a saint. The bad qualities are covering only. So no one has really changed. It's just everyone is, right now we are changed. We're in a changed state of consciousness right now. That's the problem. We have to undo the changes and get back to our original pure state of consciousness. So even the most wicked person is actually a saint underneath it. So we just have to get back to that original pure state. And chanting the names of the Supreme, names of God, that is, in this age, is recommended in the Vedas, the most powerful means, not only for yourself, but just by doing it. Just like I was chanting, a few people were joining in, that has an impact to purify everyone's consciousness in the room and on the whole planet. Even if they're not chanting, if you chant, if you yourself will chant, then you'll purify, that's the most powerful method for purifying your own consciousness. But even for people who aren't chanting, if the more of us will chant, come together and chant together in kirtan, that will automatically purify them without them even knowing about it. They'll just become naturally better people by the power of the kirtan. The whole planet will naturally become better the more we have kirtan, chanting, group chanting. You see. So the chanting of that is the recommended thing in Vedas, in this age. Harinama, 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 chanting the holy names, chanting the names of the Supreme. That will uplift the consciousness of the entire planet. And especially those who are actually doing the chanting, they're on the fast track, you see. The ones who do the chanting, they're on the fast track. But everyone, no one is left out, everybody is brought along. You see. But those who really want to get it, they should chant. And those who aren't chanting, eventually they will be, because the names are all attractive. Everybody will be chanting eventually. The whole planet will eventually be chanting. So be the first one on your block. You be the leader. You be the guru of your neighborhood. You'll be the first one on your block to chant. And then you'll be the leader, the spiritual leader of your neighborhood. Yeah. Okay, any other questions? Everybody's happy now. Let it be a part of this great revolution in consciousness.
You know, is there any way out of the situation that people who are kind of going to, conventional paths in life, and even can... agnostics, actively saying that I want only to do what is what I need. I don't care about people. No, I mean many things. Some people do it openly. Some people.
Can you make it? Can I put it in a nutshell for me what you're asking?
Okay. So, but these people wouldn't go practicing any yogas, even maybe hatha yogas. Not everyone even believe in. Exercise. These people wouldn't go into bhakti yoga or other yoga, so it seems that they just stay as they are. And they go into the spiritual paths or yogas, so they are.
Are you asking about people doing hatha yoga?
Initially different.
What is it?
Any yoga or any spiritual practice.
Same the situation for the people that don't want to change their lifestyles. As that what I mean?
Yeah, these people wouldn't go into any yogas.
Any yogas or any exercise.
What can you change then?
Well, there are definitely techniques, just like we have. Just like if you take vegetarian foodstuffs and you offer them to the Supreme Person, those foodstuffs become spiritualized or transcendentalized. And if you feed such foodstuffs to the general population, it's like we have a restaurant up here. You know, we have many restaurants. Just through restaurants, you can uplift the consciousness. They can just come. This is great food. Now we have restaurants all over the world. We just went to, we have our Govinda's restaurants, for example. We have one in Budapest. We have one in Riga, Latvia. There's one in London. They have different names sometimes, but just the restaurants alone will have a great power. You take the food, your vegetarian foods, offer them to Krishna or the Supreme Person, and feed them to people, and they'll think it's great food, but they get purified just by eating it. So the food is one of the most powerful ways. Krishna, we call it Krishna Prasadam, the mercy of Krishna. By distributing Krishna Prasadam everywhere, you know, have big. It's like in South Africa, we have a huge Rath Yatra. We feed 10,000 people's free food, you know, that's been offered to the Supreme Person with love. And they eat that food and they're transformed in their consciousness. For them, it's just good, it's free food, great free food, delicious, nutritious. But the massive distribution of sanctified foodstuffs to the general population is a very powerful method for purifying the global consciousness. That's a bit.
Oh, it can be done at home.
Can you do this at home?
I'm not practicing.
Well, you like to practice. You would like to practice this at home. You get on my free e-course.
If I practice in Tibetan Buddhism, I know.
If she's practicing in Tibetan or Buddhism or something, yeah.
Any kind of spiritual practice is very beneficial.
Yeah, but what do you do? How this food, the spiritual.
Well, if you would like to practice the Bhakti Yoga system. I give you my card, and I'll guide you how to do it at home.
She wants to do
about this food, how to make it.
Oh, we have a book called Higher Taste, how to do the food at home.
How to make it spiritual and deliver this energy to people.
How to do that?
How to make this food.
We have a book. Do we have Higher Taste here?
She is saying in.
We have a book that'll tell you how to do sanctified food at home.
Yeah.
Nandini can get you a book. How to do that? Yeah, that's great.
But it doesn't look it should be exactly bhakti yoga kind of connected thing. I think other spiritual systems.
Well, any. I don't follow the question.
The question is that in any system that she may be following.
You can do it as a Christian, as a Buddhist.
Yeah.
Offer the food of the Supreme Person, however you call him, whether you call him Buddha or Allah or Jehovah or Krishna. Before you eat, you offer food to that Supreme Person. Yeah, that's right. And that eating will purify you. That food will become transcendentalized. And by eating it, you'll become your consciousness, you see. Your body is made up of what you feed into, physically speaking. And if you feed transcendentalized foodstuffs into your body, then your brain will become transcendentalized. All your senses will become gradually transcendentalized. That's it.
It has to be the offering made of some vegetarian things, not some meat.
Yeah, you can't take products of violence. That will not be, you know, like meat. That's not acceptable because that's. You have to take things that are gentle and in harmony with the laws of nature. Human beings are meant by nature's laws to eat vegetarian foods, fruits, vegetables, dairy products, grains. We're not meant to slaughter innocent creatures. A tiger can do. By nature's law, he can do. But our body, if you study the construction of your body, the jaws, the digestive juices in the mouth, the stomach, the intestinal system, you'll see that our body is like the herb-eating animals, not the carnivorous animals. So we are meant to eat non-meat, the vegetarian type of foods, and first offer them to the Supreme Person. And by so doing, that will purify our consciousness.
What can we do to purify the waters of the earth and the planet?
Hmm. Well, the real fact, what is the polluting factor that's destroying everything is greed. It's the greed is the underlying factor that's polluting everything, the air, the water, everything. So if we can purify our consciousness of greed, then naturally the water will become clean, the air will become clean, etc. It's all begins in the subtle platform. The gross pollution of water, of course, at the same time, you should work it from both ends, obviously. I mean, you should, you know, we should have qualified ecologists. You know, I mean, instead of having plastic toothbrushes, all this stuff should be biodegradable. It's like one time I was given a toothbrush made out of cornstarch. So, you know, you put it in the earth, you put it in the water, it just dissolves into the water eventually. Now there are places in the ocean where there are millions of toothbrushes floating in big globs in the water. Can you imagine? We're turning this whole planet into a big waste dump eventually, the way things are heading. So just all the billions of water bottles that are being thrown away every day. We thought, wow, we're drinking purified water now, but we're polluting the whole earth with all these empty bottles, you know. But the government should actually, even though it's going to be expensive, they should make, just like when I remember back in the 60s, we were all using laundry detergent, which was not biodegradable. And everybody did their laundry, it completely polluting the water everywhere. And then they made a law that you have to have biodegradable laundry detergent, so it'll merge back in. You see? They have to do that with bottles too. And glass bottles will merge back in naturally, but plastic doesn't. The government needs to make laws that, you know, the plastic has to be biodegradable, the toothbrushes have to be biodegradable, this stuff has to be biodegradable. It's more expensive. And because it's expensive and it's not going to make profit, any company that tries to do that would lose money. The government now is bought out by people who are making money. The government is not actually running the scene. It's the capitalists who are running the scene behind the scene. And because they're making profit, even though they're polluting, they don't care. They just want to make the profit. See? So you have to have a powerful government which is not bought out by capitalists, and is actually going to do the right thing. To that all the, you know, it has to be biodegradable stuff. I got to have everything biodegradable. And then we can, you know, that's just one example. So we have to work it from both ends, really. You work it from that end, and then you work it from the subtle end also at the same time. You have it working from both sides. You have laws and governments which are in accordance with the subtle principle, you see. And they work to actually solve it on this side, and at the same time, you have enlightened teachers who are pushing from the other side. And actually, the government, according to the Vedic system, the government leaders are meant to be disciples of these saintly teachers, not independent power mongers. Those who actually rule the government should be disciples of saintly teachers. Saintly teachers themselves have nothing to do with management. They just want to, you know, chant and study the Vedas. They're not interested in being a manager, you know. But they're the persons who are managing the governments of the world, they should be disciples of these saintly teachers and managing the governments under the direction of those saintly teachers in accordance with Vedic principle. In fact, the Bhagavad Gita was meant for government leaders. It was meant to be for government leaders. It's a treatise for government leaders. I gave it to our congressman in Texas. I doubt if he ever read it, but I gave him a copy. So this is for government leaders. Yes.
I was just thinking that we are talking about pure water, and changing this in the situations in the purifying atmosphere or economy. But 50, 60 years ago, it was everything biodegradable. These are more modern technological things that had brought...
No, everything was not biodegradable.
No, like you said about toothbrush, the people used to use the twigs.
Oh yeah, that was more than 50 or 60 years ago. Oh, maybe in your country, yeah. In America, we've been using plastic ever since, you know, the last, who knows.
You can drink the water from the clean rivers.
Actually, before plastic came in, it was much more biodegradable. I remember plastics was, became the big thing back like in the 60s, and 50s and 60s. Before that, there was no plastic. It was practically not even known. So everything, you'd use metal or glass, and that was it. Yeah, plastic is the thing that came in, made out of oil. Cheap oil, cheap plastic. Yeah, plastic was a new thing back in the 60s. Became the new thing. Now plastics is the new thing that's going to save the world. Yeah.
Huh? Time when the air was pure and sex was
Yeah.
My question was answered.
Oh.
Yeah. I was going to ask about the economy, like how economy would operate in a society of
Yes, in the Vedic culture, actually, a pure economy doesn't even require money. I mean, everything can be done by barter. Although money can be there. If there money should be there, it should be actual money that has value, not this paper money. If money is necessary for the practical upkeep of the society, then they should go back to gold. They have this artificial paper money, you see. Up until President Nixon, the money was actually represented money that you could go to the government and claim your silver for your bills. But then Nixon decided to take it off the silver standard. And now it's not you can't get anything for it. So the money is the only value it really has is the faith that we have in it. Because in itself it has no value. Because we give value to it, therefore it has value. But if we stop giving value to it, if all of a sudden people feel the money has no value, then it has no value. It's just like when the Confederates lost the Civil War, they used Confederate money for wallpaper. It had absolutely no value. So actually the money has no value. We imagine a value to it. So that creates, that leads to inflation, such a situation where the money is artificial. So it's better to have actual, something that actually has value, like gold and silver. Let that be the actual money. Or even better, you can get by just by barter. That's even a better system. But if there's impractical, then money can be utilized. But it should have actual value. That will stop the artificial inflation that causes great havoc in the society. People's life savings are completely destroyed by inflation. They work hard their whole life and then the money becomes valueless, you see. Any other question?
Surely, Buddha, you mentioned that we're not this body, but if we're not the body, who are we?
Yes. Well, that implies that you have a sense of identity or existence, doesn't it? Some philosophies say that actually you don't really exist at all. You're just a figment of You couldn't say you're a figment of your own imagination, because how you could imagine that you exist if you don't really exist? So yes, we do have an identity. That's how we can ponder our identity. We do have an identity. So that identity is actually in quality one with the Supreme Person. So that means our actual identity is we're eternal servants of that Supreme Person. Whether you call him by this name or that name, is Jehovah, Allah, Krishna, Buddha, that's not the issue. But we're all this, each one of us is actually a servant of that Supreme Person. That's our actual identity. We're a spiritual beings that have eternal, youthful... We actually have forms in the spiritual existence. These material forms are coverings of the spiritual form. It's like the Bible says, man is made after the image of God. You see? Krishna says the same thing in the Gita. I'm the source of everything. From me everything comes. So we are emanations from that Supreme Person. We are His energy. And we're part of that Supreme Person's unlimitedly expanded energy. Therefore, we're meant to serve Him. That's our identity. Any other questions? Everyone's happy? Find out who you really are. You're not your body. You're an eternal being full of bliss and knowledge. Now you just have to wake up. That's all. And be yourself. And the yoga system is the way to do that. Especially bhakti is the most powerful system in this age. And within bhakti, the mantra yoga system is the cutting edge, inner secret technique to chant the holy name of the Supreme Person. In any religion, Allah, Jehovah, Krishna, Christ, chant that name in the early morning hours. That's the innermost secret technique of how to reconnect your consciousness, how to actually take shelter of that name and be carried across the border between the material and spiritual dimensions into that spiritual dimension and actually live there in that identity. So I guess we can stop here if there's nothing else. We thank you all very much for your wonderful hearing tonight. You've heard very nicely. Thank you very much.